I think it's Nick Cage.
Nick Cage.
And then that was Brady Gush and then Brady King, right? So three more including tomorrow. Retours tomorrow, right?
Retours tomorrow.
So how does it work? We do all seven in the first six.
We do.
Or I guess it's six and right, seven together.
Six and seven together. Yeah.
Six and seven together. And then Hanukkah and then
Rosh Chodesh and Hanukkah.
Rosh Chodesh and then Hanukkah.
Yeah. Rosh Chodesh is Tadr.
Oh, fair. We'll have to go over which. We might. I know we have to probably roll the Torah.
I can tell you roll.
Yeah. We should probably roll.
We'll have to.
Figure out which is for.
Yeah.
Well,
and there's enough for tomorrow, right?
Enough for yeah. That's right. It's a big day.
You don't know how involved or not involved they are. Maybe I'll reach out to Jonathan today.
Involved in the service, you mean?
Yeah.
They probably want Elias. That's for sure.
Maybe I'll reach out to John today because if he can write out the names ahead of time, that would be helpful.
That's great.
My synagogue did, growing up did that, and it honestly made things so much easier.
Yeah,
that's what I did for my own prep. I just like wrote out, here are all the names, here's what you need to know, just go.
All right, so Parshas Miketz is amazing Parshas. It's basically, we see that the fact that these Parshas fall out during Hanukkah, there's got to be a connection between Hanukkah and the story of Yosef. And the story of Yosef itself is an amazing story, but the thing is that the Torah ends with the story of Yosef. Sefer Bereishis ends with the story of Yosef. To the extent that if you look at the last pasuk in Sefer Bereishis, so it says it's very anticlimactic. The Yomas Yosef ben Meir ve'Esher Shanim vayichantu oso vayasim ba'aron Mitzrayim. So Joseph died. He was 110 years old. They embalmed him. They put him in a coffin in Egypt. Wow, that's really exciting. It's real dramatic. You can't get more dramatic than that. That's how you end the Sefer. So I think what's saying is that if you turn to Sefer Shmos, it says Eli Shmos ben Yisrael, goes through the names. So Rashi says, Shenimshu l'kochavim, they're like the stars. They bring him out. God brings him out in the at night. Takes him away during the day. God does so with counting and with their names. So he knows every star has a name. So in other words, they don't get lost in the crowd. So the same way the Jewish people, El Shos Bnei Shol, the names Bnei Shol, the individuals don't get lost in the crowd. So what it seems to be saying is that there's a transition going on over here between individuals to a nation. So Sefer Shmos is starting the story of a nation, Jewish people's nation. Sefer Bereishis ends the book of individuals. So Sefer Bereishis is about individuals. You have Adam, you have Noach, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Yosef. Yosef is the ultimate individual of the book of Bereishis. So we see that basically what's happened, the main thrust of here is we're dealing with a book of individuals that culminates with Yosef. That's why Yosef's death is the last puzzle, because saying this is the end of the story of individuals. This is the end of. So that means when it means so much when Yaakov says to Esau in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov says take all your gifts. So Esau says Yeshli Rav, I have plenty. So Yaakov says, it's okay, Yeshli Kol, I have everything, so I don't need anything. So then Yosef said, okay, I'll take it. So the Zohar says, what does it mean, Yeshli Kol? It says, Yeshli Kol, Zu Yosef. I have Yosef. If I have Yosef, I have everything. So Yosef is a culmination of the book of Bereishis, which is the book of individuals. So he's the ultimate individual. So we have so much to learn from him. And the ironic thing is that people... It's written story. The story is written so difficult to understand. There's so many complicated questions. It's understanding what Yosef's doing, but it has to be prominent. It has to be something important. It has to be teaching us something. So it's hard to really know what it's teaching us. Like, be nice to your brothers. I mean, what exactly is the message of the Torah telling us about the story of Yosef? There's got to be some message that's so fundamental to Jewish people, to the point where it's vital that we don't understand the message, and the message is so unclear. No one explains what the message is. I mean, why is he tricking his brothers for 2 years, a year and a half? His father's mourning over him, and he has to play this game where he brings back Binyamin and has to make the brothers fight for his life. And why is that so important? What's Yosef thinking? So Ramban says a crazy thing. Ramban says because he had these dreams, his nevuah, he had prophecy of these dreams, and he knew they had to come true. So he couldn't just tell them the name because the dreams didn't come true yet. So I mean, that's really a tough one to swallow. I mean, basically he's able to do all these averus, all these terrible things to his brothers because his dreams need to come true. I mean, that's manipulation 101. I mean, it's hard to justify that as being the reason, but the Ramban says it, so it must mean something. So another crazy thing in the story is the beginning of this week's parsha. The beginning of the parsha, basically, Yosef gets up before Pharaoh and he interprets these dreams, and Pharaoh says, "Do you ever meet someone so smart? Let's make him the king of the country." I mean, the most insane thing you ever heard in your life. The story makes no sense. This guy is an ex-convict. He's a foreigner. He doesn't have anything to the country. And he's a dream interpreter, so he's like a tarot card reader. So Pharaoh says, "You ever see anyone more fit to be the king of the whole, king of the world, basically, king of the country?" And they believe him automatically. They said his dreams were interpreted his dream. And he said he predicted the next 14 years of Egypt. And they say, "Yeah, he's right." And then they just say, "Who's better to lead than a tarot card reader who's a foreigner, who's an ex-convict? I mean, that's the perfect person to lead our country." So and everyone said, "Yeah, let's do it. Joseph, lead the country." I mean, it's incredible that people don't focus on this. You don't find anyone asking what was Pharaoh thinking. So our some of Farshim would say that it was a miracle. It was like God like put everyone in, made everyone stupid for a minute and made a dumb decision, and they were stuck with it, which is hard to understand. You see the whole country basically listen to Joseph and do what he wanted. So I always explain that. This story about Joseph. Joseph is an extraordinary person. Extraordinary, I mean it literally, because his name is Yosef. Yosef means he was extra. Yosef means Yosef ben Acher. Basically, when Rachel named him, he said, "I should have another son." So it's very similar to Yehuda. Yehuda, his name is Yehuda because Apam Odes Hashem. Leah said, "Now I will thank God." So Rashi says, "What does that mean?" Rashi says, "Why now is she thanking God?" By Yehuda, his fourth son. So he said, because there's four wives and three children times four wives is 12. So really, my chelik that I'm supposed to get is three, but instead I got four. So the fourth son, she says, and now I'm going to thank God because now I thank God for the fact that I get more than Yosef Mechelik, more than my chelik, more than my. So what does it mean? You only thank God when you get more than you're supposed to get. What does that mean? So you see clearly that there's an idea of getting more than your chelik, more than your chelik. That's what you thank God for. And if you understand Chanukah is very similar in many ways. Chanukah, we see what's the purpose of Chanukah? People try to compare Chanukah to Christmas. Really, Chanukah is connected to Thanksgiving, because we explain L'cholos L'Halashim Chagadol that we thank the reason why we have Chanukah is in order to thank God. And now it's so much. This is so true. The Rambam, when he brings the halachas of Hallel, he doesn't bring in the hilchos tefillah, that's the logical place, but in the laws of davening, he puts in the laws of Chanukah. Because we learn the laws of Hallel from Chanukah. I mean, it's crazy. The only explanation is it's Jewish Thanksgiving. That's why it's not Christmas. It's Thanksgiving. That's why this year is a good year because it falls out close to Thanksgiving. It was a few years ago, fell out on Thanksgiving. So it's really, there's no coincidence. There's a reason for this. The reason of Thanksgiving, the harvest festival, is because it's the end of the harvest. So basically, thanking God for all my bounty that I got, all the extra things I got from the crops and everything. That's what I'm thinking. That's the time of year. So Chanukah is basically the time of year in which we thank God for all the things we have, but specifically the extra things. Why for the extra things? So basically, another thing about Chanukah is amazing. It's the only mitzvah in the whole Torah where you have built-in levels. So the Gemara says that if mitzvah Chanukah near Yisur Beisur, so the mitzvah Chanukah is one candle for the whole family. But he says if you're Mahajan, you do something, your extra special mitzvah, So you do one candle for every member of the household. And if you're super duper extra mitzvah, then you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, add one candle a day. So some say that means for the whole house. Some people say that every person should light one candle for the whole day. But the point is that this is a built-in thing. Where do you find this? You have one level, and you have super kiddush in a plastic cup, kiddush in a silver plated cup, and you have super duper kiddush in a silver cup. I mean,
it's like the mind explosion.
Why would you do? Why is there a built-in level to this thing? So people make a mistake. They think it means it's supposed to be strict. The stricter you are, the better it is. Mahadrim and Mahadrim. So if you go, you see that they have a conscious label. It's actually a kosher company called Mahadrim. You know, if you go to Borough Park, you see there's a company from Brooklyn called Mahadrim. Why is it called Mahadrim? Because it's trying to say we're really kosher, really very kosher. And if someone say really kosher on the label, some say say glatt kosher, which is a mistake. Glatt kosher is only with meat, with beef. You know, there's no such thing as a glatt kosher chicken. There's no such thing as a glatt kosher. But people still call it glatt kosher because they say it's extra kosher. So another way to do it is another mistake. They say Mahadrim and Mahadrim. It's so kosher. It's like you're so strict about kosher. So that makes sure. I remember Rav Heinemann from the Star K, who's my Rebbe in Baltimore. So he said that someone asked him about this ice cream company that wrote that this is so kosher. It's Mahadrim and Mahadrim. So Rav Heinemann said, someone eats ice cream and they're not Mahadrim and Mahadrim. I mean, to say that it's very kosher is a qualifier. Anyone who eats ice cream is not Mahadrim and Mahadrim. You're not that strict if you eat ice cream, because if someone's strict, who's careful about keeping Torah, they don't indulge in these things. But the point is that Mahadrim and Mahadrim is used for kosher and for strict. But the fact is, Mahadrim doesn't mean that. Mahadrim means, comes the word, an esrog we could call a pre-eitz hadar. It's a beautiful fruit. Hadar means beautiful. So what the Gemara is saying is that it's that there's levels of beauty. You have beautiful, regular, but if you have regular mitzvah, then if you do more beautiful, then that's better. So we see that beauty in the mitzvah Chanukah is part of the making it more beautiful. Means like you're adding to the mitzvah, so to speak, in a way, and that's where we do it nowadays, in a way that's extra special. It's beautiful. So this concept of beauty is very connected to Yosef, because Yosef, Rachel was called Yifas Torah Fas Mara. She was beautiful, and that's why Yaakov married her. She was beautiful. Then it says by Yosef, he was Yifas Torah Fas Mara. He was beautiful also. So this concept of beauty is very interesting. It's very strange. It doesn't really fit, because, as we know, Shlomo Malach said in Mishlei, Shekar Chem V'Heval Yofi, in Eish Yischayel. Falsehood, beauty is falsehood. Charm, charisma is falsehood, and yofi, beauty is fleeting. Hevel, it means it's just like steam. It's like it just goes away. So he criticizes Hevel, chen, and yofi. Meanwhile, the Torah seems to praise Yosef for this thing. He's wherever he goes, he's very charismatic. Everyone listens to him, and everyone likes him. Everyone, he's a very likable person, and he's beautiful. He's so good looking. He's Brad Pitt times 100, times 1,000. He used to walk down the street. The Gemara says, Benos Alishur, they used to climb the walls to see him, like the Beatles. Like Lil, he used to walk down the street, and they go crazy over Yosef. Yosef was a rock star, and more than that, he was the most secular Jew in history. He defined Egypt. Egypt was a world superpower. He led the world superpower at the time, and Egypt basically followed him. Basically, the Navi calls Yosef Mitzrayim Eglah Yefeyefiyah, a beautiful calf. That's how they describe Mitzrayim. Why? Because it was Yosef was a beautiful calf. That's what he was an ox, a young ox, because he was called a nar. He was called a young boy. So he was basically a young ox, which is an eagle. Eglah Yefeyefiyah was a symbol of Egypt because of Yosef. So Yosef basically defined secular culture. He just go along with it. He actually defined it. So define this concept of secular culture very much is a very, very integral part of Hanukkah, because the Greeks basically define Western civilization. They define secular society. Secular society is based on Judaism and Jews and Greeks. Jews and Greeks. Basically, this is what Winston Churchill said: if Jews and Greeks contribute more to Western civilization than any two nations in history. any two nations, whatever, that influenced the world. So basically, Jews contributed God. I mean, basically, God was taught to the world by Jews. Reason, a philosophy of Christianity and everything, because Jews. And Jews also had a tremendous impact on the world. They, if you look today, who percentage of Nobel Prize winners in chemistry and medicine, and it's incredible. Jews are less than 0.25% of the world population, and they're like 30% of these Nobel Prizes. They impact the world, and everyone knows in high tech, the high tech center of the high tech world is Israel. And basically, everything's going on to technology. And this is after the fact that statements were made, like the four people who had most influence in Western civilization in the 20th century were Marx, Einstein, Freud, and Darwin. So basically, three out of four are Jewish. If they say three are Jews, one was mistaken. So even in the secular world, we have tremendous influence. And the Greeks obviously had tremendous influence on the main concept of Greece was beauty. That was the thing that they were focused on. That was beauty was a Greek thing. And the Chazal actually attribute to the Greeks to beauty because it says the Greeks come from Yefes. Yefes was the son of Noah, and Noah gave him a blessing. Yaftil him Yefes v'yishkam al Hashem. That God should give beauty to Yefes. His name was Yefes, which is beautiful. And you should dwell in the house of shame. What does that mean, dwell in the house of shame? The Gemara says, it means that Bate Knesset or Bate Midrash shall Yisrael, that shame was the forefather of the Jewish people. And basically the Greeks should dwell in the shuls and the yeshivas of the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? So the Gemara says that there's only two languages you can write a Sefer Torah in. If you write a Sefer Torah in Hebrew and one letter is missing, the whole Torah is puzzle. But the other thing you'll have to do is write a Sefer Torah in Greek. What does that mean? You read a whole Torah in Greek. Sofer knows Greek. That's what it says. Basically, it doesn't make any sense, but that's what it says. Because that's Greeks has to be in the shuls and the yeshivas of the Jewish people. It's amazing. So basically, what we see is that we see that Yavon, Greece, which is also the symbol of peace, is a Yonah. Yonah is a dove. The which time of Noah, right? It was Jadav and the raven, you know, deeply connected. The word Yavon is the first three letters of Yonah, because it's connected to Israel. To just basically this tremendous connection between Yavon, Greeks, and Jewish people, and basically Yosef embodied this combination. He was beautiful because he brought the Greek aspect into all the shame into the tents of Jewish people. And that's what Yosef is all about. Yosef's whole story is about someone who values beauty doesn't look at beauty as something as that is non-integral, that is basically hevel and negative. He looks at it as something positive, looks at something that we're supposed to strive for. It's an important aspect, even though it seems like it's just extra. It seems like it's just Yosef, like Yosef is extra. It seems like it's extra, but really it's integral. I think that's the theme. We'll see why, but that's a theme of the story, is that Yosef is adding this to Jewish people. He's adding this extra element to Jewish people, saying that beauty is important. Now, why would beauty be important? Beauty is just about skin deep. Why should it be important? It's not a value Jewish people should look to as important. So I think Yosef is trying to... This is the whole story of Yosef trying to teach us the story to teach us that it is important. We think it's not, but it really is vitally important. And the way I understand this is we see this in the story because I always ask what was the thing that Yosef was waiting for? What was he? Why did he reveal himself to the brothers at that point in time? So if you look, I think there's one verse that explains this whole thing. Explains the whole what he needed to hear before he revealed himself. And basically, it says that Yehuda basically, when Yosef said that Binyamin has to stay as a slave in Egypt, so Yehuda basically said, we're not going to stand for that. We're not standing for Binyamin. He defended Binyamin and he says, we're not going anywhere until we take Binyamin with us. So what happened in that conversation? So Yehuda had to justify, explain why it's so important that Binyamin doesn't go. He can't be a slave. He has to come back to his father. So he explains, he says, look, my father had two children from his wife, and this woman, his one of them got killed, one was eaten by Taraf Taraf, he was ripped up by an animal, and the only one left, the Biyam is only one left from Rachel. So because of that, you can't leave it without him. He's got to come back. So what has he explained that Binyamin is special to Yaakov? So on page 250. So it says, so verse 26 says, and our father said, go back, buy us some food. We said, we cannot go down, only if the youngest brother is with us. And he would go down, and we're not going to see the man's face if our youngest brother is with us. So Yosef demanded that they bring Binyamin, or else he wouldn't give him food. So he says, but it can't happen because my father said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One is left, I presume, the last he has been torn to pieces, so I've not seen him since. So you take this one too from my presence, and disaster befall him, then you will have brought down my horriness in evil to the grave. In other words, you're going to destroy our father if you take Binyamin because he's the only one left from Rachel. So how does the Torah describe this? You know that my wife bore me two sons. This verse is very underrated. He said, my wife bore me two sons. What does it mean, my wife bore me two sons? So what Yehuda is saying, he's admitting that Yaakov's main wife was Rachel. So you think, why would Yosef want that? What Yosef needs to hear that Yehuda admits that his mother is more important than Leah, is that Rachel is more important than Leah? But that's exactly what happened. He said to him, my only wife gave me two sons. Because otherwise, why is Binyamin important? He's only one of 12. But because he's the one person from my wife, my main wife. Once Yehuda said that, Yosef could reveal himself. Why? Why is it so important? Because the brothers looked at Yaakov and said, this guy's a creep. He marries this woman because she's beautiful. It says, and the Torah says, then Yaakov lunges for her, and he kisses her, and all the people make fun of him. Because what's up with the romance? What's up with the hot chick? You marry a hot chick? That's Judah. That's Torah. You have a trophy wife. That's what you need. So Yehuda admitted that this is important to Yaakov, and it was legitimate. He says legitimate that my wife is Rachel because she's beautiful. So what's that? What's the message saying? The message is saying that Yosef is trying to tell the brothers that you think that what's important is the bottom line. You're like Esau. Bottom line is what's important. This whole story is telling us that Rivka saw when Yaakov Esau was going to get the brachas. He was going to get the physical blessings. Yaakov was always going to get the spiritual blessings. But Rivka said, you can't split up those two things. You can't split up physical and spiritual like the Christians do that. The Christians say a priest can't get married, can't be involved in the physical world. He has to torture himself, live in a ivory tower. That's religion. Then secularism, the physical world is separate from religion. Those two things are mixed together. Physical is evil. Sex is evil. All these things are evil. Relationship is evil, because basically all you do is thinking about it's just physical. Part of the world is the evil part of the world. So there's God and there's Satan. There's two separate things. Rivka says, you can't do that. You can't separate the two. They have to be combined together. You need the physical universe has to be holy. Holiness comes from the fact that you're uplifting the physical universe. You're not just looking at one side of the coin. It's two separate entities. So Yosef basically took this to the next level. He said the physical universe, it's not just the physical universe is important. It's that it's vital, it's essential. Even though it looks extra, it looks like it's just an extra thing, it's not an extra thing. It's vital to the essence of a Jew. Because basically, if you just develop spirituality, you have no self, you're not involved, it's just God. It's just God, you don't have an individuality, you have selfhood. So, first thing God told Avraham Avinu was, lech lecha, go for yourself. Because if you don't have a self, you can't relate, you can't connect. You can't choose to love God if you don't have a self that chooses to love God. So the only way that can happen, Yosef is explaining, is that you need to have the concept of beauty, because beauty says that there's some, it has to do with my charisma, my personality, my uniqueness as an individual. What's chay? What's charm? So like, someone gave me an example, like Princess Diana. Princess Diana captivated the world. Was she beautiful? Well, according to the Greeks, maybe not. Greeks look at symmetry. Symmetry is what makes something beautiful. So she didn't. She's a hook nose, they say. But everyone looked at her like, oh my God, she was like the most beautiful woman in the world. Why? Because she had this personality, her uniqueness. Everyone looked at her as a unique person. That's what chen does. Chen turns something that maybe not objectively beautiful, turns to something subjectively beautiful, which makes it become objective. It's a connection between, like when you see a sunset, it's beautiful. Why? Is beauty in the eye of the beholder? No, there's such a thing as objective beauty that a subjective person could look at it in his own way, but it's everyone knows it's beautiful because it's inherently beautiful. So the kinds of beauty is very straight, hard to tie down. Is it objective? Is it subjective? Is it based on me? Based on reality? But the point is that what beauty does is it brings out the uniqueness of an individual. It brings out creativity of a person. It is based on beauty. All these kinds of individuality is based on beauty. So whenever you have a communist country, a country where people are not encouraged to be creative, encouraged to be unique individuals. They look dead. They're working for the state. They're not working for themselves. That's one of the beautiful things of Western civilization, is that it basically says, the concept of Greek says that the individual is important, the individual's vision is important, the creativity is important, color is important. If you look at things as through the lens of a Yehuda, you look at things as black and white. If you look at the story of Yehuda in Parshas Vayeshev last week, it's basically this guy who all he cares about is what he gets out of people. He marries this woman because she's the daughter of a businessman, his business partner. So he basically didn't marry so she's beautiful. He didn't marry because he likes her. His personality, she's personality. He married because it's very practical. It's his business partner who get better business because of it. He doesn't show up to his children's birth. He doesn't name his children. And the names of his children end up reflecting his relationship with his wife. If he says, air, onon, basically emptiness, mourning, you know, shela, which means like hell, you know, I mean, like all these negative words. Basically, it doesn't matter to him. He's the whole story is saying the contrast of him and Yosef. Yosef, everywhere he goes, he loves everyone. He charms everyone because he cares. He's sincere. Everyone matters to him because he's full of personality. He's full of life. Full of individual. He's the most unique individual in the world. And he looks at himself, not, I'm great. He looks at himself, I'm beautiful. He looks at himself as like, I have so much to share, I have so much to connect, to people. I care about people. He how did he get out of jail? Because the butler remembered him. How come the butler remembered him? Because he noticed that they were sad. He's like, why are you so sad? He says, I'm in jail. That's what I'm saying. No, you're extra sad. Who notices someone's extra sad in a jail? But the fact is, that this guy saw, this guy cares, this guy is sincere, this guy really, really, really understands me. He's someone who cares about people he meets in a deep way, and he wants to help them. And he interpreted their dreams. They knew he was right, because they intuitively understood. And when he's telling them this is the interpretation of the dream, they saw the sincerity, they saw his connection to them in such a deep way that they saw that it clicked with them. He says that he's totally right. This was what happened. And it is what happened. That's exactly what Pharaoh saw. Pharaoh saw this guy. He was mesmerized. Everyone in the room was mesmerized. They saw this guy get up in front of him and say, you're going to have 7 years of famine, and seven years of famine. So what you have to do is save your money. So what? Pharaoh looks at this guy as an economic genius. What kind of genius thing? Was he burning? What is he? Alan Greenspan, he understands economics so well. Save your money. That's the genius of Joseph. No, but he understood this guy is the best politician in history. This guy gets up in front of a room and says, ask not what your country could do for you, ask what you could do for your country. And everyone listens. Imagine Trump gets up and says that. Everyone would it's a joke. You know, the guy's a liar. He's a politician. Any politician, not just Trump, but any politician gets up and says that. Biden gets up also. They say, "What? You save your money. You told me to save my money." No one listens to it. But Pharaoh said, "This guy, everyone's going to listen to him because he's. I know he's right. I know his interpretation of my dream is right because I see. Everyone in the room knew he was telling my interpretation. Everyone knew this was going to happen. It was a given that everyone understood that Yosef's interpretation was correct, and they had to do something about it. It was like, where do you find someone like this? There's no one in history like this, no politician history. And that's like what happened. Yosef took over the country. Everyone trusted him with their money. The whole economy was in his hands. And no one blinked. No one blinked an eye. He says to everyone, be slave. You know, the whole country goes, Yosef, we need food. I mean, it's amazing. There's one guy, everyone comes to this guy and says, we need food. I mean, in America, what happened was mayhem, chaos. It wouldn't be like go to one guy and say, give us food. Everyone would grab whatever food they could get. But Yosef basically was a person who imbued this idea of beauty, which is basically a concept of I look at my life as not just what I accomplish, what I achieve, what I get out of stuff, how I manipulate life. I look at life as a relationship. Basically, I care about people. I care about every moment of my life. Every moment of my life is meaningful. That's why he had to stay in jail for 2 years. Because why was he punished so harshly? Because he asked the butler to get him out of jail. I mean, that's pretty harsh. I mean, just he says, look, I'm in jail. Butler, remember me when you go to Pharaoh. So, and it says, Vayishka, he forgot him. And then then our parsha begins that 2 years passed. Yosef comes out of prison after 2 years. Why have to be there for 2 years? So Chazal said because he tried to manipulate the butler to ask him to get out of jail. What's the big deal? You're not praying to the butler like he's God. You're saying, take advantage of this opportunity. God said, if you do that, you have an ounce of manipulation in you. No one's going to believe you when you get up in front of Pharaoh. So he needed 2 years to prepare for this, to have bitachon Hashem, always bitachon Hashem. I mean, people think bitachon Hashem means trust in God. Everything's going to be okay. It's not true. Not everything doesn't always end up okay. What bitachon means and what it says, Asher gev Asher yiftach Hashem, right? Baruch gev Asher yiftach Hashem, Hashem yiftachu. Blessed be the person who trusts in God, who says in benching, right? And God is his trustworthy partner. So what does that verse mean? So Chazal says, this is Yosef. This is Yosef. Why Yosef B'tochem? B'tochem doesn't mean God, everything's okay. B'tochem means God cares about me. God, I matter to God. Therefore, everything that happens in my life is meaningful. Everything that happens in my life is from God. It's like a connection to God through every minute of my life. That's what B'tochem means. B'tochem means that things might not be okay, but okay, I define okay. And God's telling me, you don't define okay, I define okay. God defines okay. God's saying, it's going to be okay, even though it doesn't look okay. It's because Yosef knew in his bones that this is the truth, that God cares about him, and every moment is meaningful, matters to him. So Yosef is telling us this incredible message. As we tell the brothers, the brother said he accused the brothers of being spies. So they said, we're not spies, we're brothers. But brothers can't be spies. What was his brother's answer to the fact that they're not spies? So the answer is because Yosef was giving a message. Yosef was saying, why are you spies? Can you ever stop Boston Lyrics? You're coming to see the nakedness of the land. What do you mean nakedness of the land? You're coming here to see where we're vulnerable and take advantage of us. That's what a spy is, a person who finds them where they're vulnerable, take advantage of them. So the brother said, no, we're brothers. We care. We care about each other. We're not manipulators. We're people who care. That's why spies and brothers are opposite. Not because the brothers can't be spies, because brothers mean we're brotherly love. We care about each other. That's what Yosef was trying to teach them, that he's a king who doesn't care about money. Basically, they come with giving the money back. Yosef giving them money back. So they come back to Egypt and they say, here's the pay you double because you by accident put money in our sacks. He says, oh, don't worry, God must have done it. They thought to themselves, this guy's crazy. This guy is the king of the world. He's the most power. He doesn't care about money. I mean, what king doesn't care about money? And then it says that Yaakov gave him little trinkets, little treats, like Godiva, chocolate. And she give it to Pharaoh. So Yehuda put it in his bag. He thought, Dad's crazy. You think this king's going to care about Godiva chocolates? This guy's a power hungry guy. He's a king of the world. He's going to care about money. He's going to care about. So when they saw that they didn't care about money, so then after that, you said they gave him the Godiva because they realized this king's not normal. This king's the king who actually cares about people. You know, things matter to him. So I got to give him Godiva chocolates because that's even though it's not part of the. we expect from the kibbutz, that's the extra thing, extra the yosef, the extra addition to productivity in life that really makes everything come together. And that's why what Yosef, the whole story is trying to teach him this message, and when he finally hears Samuel Lelishi, my wife, gave birth to two children. He realized that they finally understood what he was trying to teach them, which was that beauty matters. The extra stuff is what matters, because if you don't have that, you have nothing. Because you're going to be a person who stares into space and doesn't care about life. The only way you care about life is the extra part of life is essential. You look at it as essential. The brothers end up not listening to him, because if you look afterwards in Vayechi, it says in Vayigash, it says that Yosef told them that they should be. They should tell them that don't say you're shepherds. Say you're cattle merchants, because you want to be integrated in society. Yosef was a person who thought secular society was not a contradiction to Torah. Secular society is a complement to Torah. It's not the Greek as an enemy. Greek is part of the Jewish people, because the Greeks taught us that beauty matters. Beauty is a central concept. And so Yosef looked at it and said, secular culture, therefore, the reason we're engulfed from exile is because we're supposed to connect to non-Jews. We're not supposed to put ourselves in a ghetto. But the Yehuda wanted to be in a ghetto. Yehuda wanted to be in a ghetto. So when Yosef gives him the advice, don't tell him you're shepherds. Tell me, cattle merchants, right? Say you're cattle merchants. So he goes up to Pharaoh Yehuda and says, guess what? We're shepherds. Our parents are shepherds. Our grandparents were all shepherds from the beginning. Yosef is like, oh, God. Like, what are you doing? He says, Yehuda didn't believe in Yosef's philosophy. Basically said that we have to be separate. We have to be insulated. And this, it's an amazing thing. This schism between the brothers and Yehuda and Yosef, the brothers, is with us today. And so people think that means that you're supposed to be nice to people and nice to your brothers and not fight. But that's not at all what it's saying. It's saying that basically the secular Jew and the religious Jew have to figure out a way to come together. That's really the issue. In Israel, it's exactly the problem. And that's exactly what the problem of Hanukkah, the whole story of Hanukkah is, the Hellenists and the Maccabees. So we think the Maccabees were won the war, but they didn't win anything. We went to exile less than 100 years later. It was the end of the beginning. We won the battle, but we lost the war. So this is exactly what Hanukkah teaches. Hanukkah teaches that the results don't matter. It's not the results that matter. It's the path to the results that matter. It's your personality that matters. Your contribution that matters. Your individual personality and self that you create is what matters over here. And that's the beauty of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a story that teaches us that the light and the darkness doesn't mean that you're religious. It means that you care about life. Things matter to you. You bring the Greek together with the Jew. It's Yosef with Yehuda. Like it says in next week's Haftorah, that Eitz Yosef and Eitz Yehuda have to come together. And without that, you never get anything. So as long as we have religious people who think they're superior to the secular Jews, and the secular Jew thinks that the religious people are crazy and they're not involved. They don't care about real things that matter in life. Then we have a schism that stems from Yosef and the brothers that will never be solved. But the problem is that people don't focus on this. They think this is a side issue. This is not really important. The issue is not about a secular Jewish religion. They look at it as you know either you're religious or you're not. You keep Torah, you're not. The bottom line, basically bottom line, what you end up how you identify yourself, and that's the problem. Because if you learn this section of the Torah properly in its context, realize how important it is, and this is the story. Torah wastes so much ink speaking about this story. It must be telling us a message that's more than just a simple be nice to your brothers, because the story doesn't say be nice to your brothers. It doesn't really say that at all. But if you understand it this way, then basically we understand Hanukkah. And my Rosh Hashiva used to say that Hanukkah is a holiday that is not, the miracle is not so great. The Pnei Yeshua says that the mitzvah Hanukkah was the nes of Hanukkah wasn't necessary. Basically it says meaning if you have impure oil, it's actually allowed to use it for the Hanukkah, for the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash, because it's a public offering, and that's allowed. to use something to tell you. So this whole, the whole nace, this whole great miracle that they had all these oil, vials of oil that were impure, that now we all of a sudden we had one vial that lasts for 8 days. What a miracle. Pnei Yeshua says, not necessary. We don't need a miracle. We didn't need a miracle. It's not because you could use impure oil. So he says that it's chibisir. God gave an extra love to Jewish people. He didn't have to do it, but he did extra. Exactly the same thing of the mitzvah of Hanukkah, which is extra. Yosef is extra. All these things are extra. The miracle wasn't necessary. The whole Hanukkah miracle wasn't necessary. And what kind of miracle was it? It was a bogus miracle. They tried to make an excuse to say, well, the miracle of the Greeks, beating the Greeks in war was part of it. But it's not true. The miracle was for the 8 days. Beis Yosef wrote a book on Hanukkah saying that asking why is it that we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days if the miracle was only 7 days? He gives 100 answers to this question in Sefer, Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and he says that one answer he says is that the 8 days for the winning the war. Great. So basically 7 out of 8 is this silly miracle that we don't even need oil was last for 8 days. That's a ridiculous miracle. That it's embarrassing to even say. People are saying, well, it's not. Everyone says, really, because of the Greek army. Well, according to Beis Yosef, it's only one of the 8 knights winning the war, and it's only one of 100 answers. So basically, it's not a very prominent answer. The answer is the oil less than 8 days, but what kind of miracle is that? So again, what my Rashi used to say was, there are plenty of bigger miracles in Jewish people, but the Hanukkah was teaching us how to deal with secular culture. And that's something we never have to deal with. Purim teaches us how to deal with Hesapanim, where God's not visible, God's not around the world. How do you deal with that? We never dealt with that before. So Purim helps us deal with that in the exile when God's not visible. Hanukkah helps us because it teaches us that how to deal with secular culture, with something which we would think is not a big deal, just to isolate yourself. But we can't isolate ourselves. As much as we try to create Europe again in Israel and in America, we have these Hasidic enclaves where everyone's separate. The world is so open that I think this is deliberately that way. That we're so open that you can't show a little phone. You connect the secular world. You walk down the street from Meir Sharm even 50 years ago. There's malls. There's all these secular things that all these children are exposed to. It's very hard for a child to deal with that. So the idea is that Hanukkah teaches is how it was instituted, not because of the miracles, it's instituted because we have to learn how to deal with secular culture. And Hanukkah is the only holiday that's really dedicated to that topic, which is something that is very timely and people don't associate with religion. But Hanukkah is specifically a holiday that teaches us, you know, why is it associated with Christmas? Not because it's really Thanksgiving, but Christmas is the ultimate season's greetings, holiday season, you know, that everyone secular celebrates. Hanukkah is the younger brother of that. It's basically the loser younger brother of Christmas. Everyone wants to be Christian. Everyone wants to have a Christmas tree. All the Jewish kids want a Christmas tree. But the idea is that this is teaching us how to deal with that. That's Hanukkah. That's the purpose of Hanukkah. And Yosef basically told us that not to look at it as an enemy. You have to look at it as we have to learn from it that. From Western civilization, from the Greeks, that beauty is something that is not just extra. Beauty is something that is essential. The extra is essential to our lives as individuals. And if you understand this, Mitzvah Chanukah, then we'll get one step closer, or many steps closer, to the time when Eitz Yosef and Yehuda will be combined together, and that will enable Mashiach to come. Okay, any questions? Feel free to ask, and otherwise have a good Shabbos.
Christian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. But there's a lot of issues with modern Orthodox that they struggle with, which is based on the struggles of Yosef. If you look at Yosef led to many terrible things to Jewish people. In order to get him out of the Nile River, they had a tablet. It said, Alei Shor, wise bull. You put him in the Nile River and his coffin came up. It magically came up. That same tablet, they used it to bring out the Chet HaEgel, the golden calf. And basically his grandson, Yoav ben Nevat, recreated the golden calf, and he was the most evil king in history. And that came directly from Yosef. Now, it's not just a coincidence, because Yosef was called Egel. He was called a calf. He was a young calf. And so all these, the worst sins of Jewish people happened because of Yosef. So the brothers said to him, this guy's dangerous. This guy's very, you got to get rid of him because he's bringing all these extra things into Jewish people that are not necessary. So it's the same problem with Maroth. Maroth actually has this issue. Basically, they look at secular culture and say, this is going to kill us. This is going to destroy us. And that's why
Yosef can be used as kind of a kind of the defense and as the
that's right.
anti.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's very complicated. That's why you need Yehuda also. Yehuda, even though Yehuda is secondary to Yosef in the story, but Yehuda is necessary for Mashiach to come. Mashiach ben Yosef precedes Mashiach ben David, which is from Yehuda. So the whole concept of connecting secular culture is very dangerous. But it's also Yosef is saying, even though it's dangerous, you have to do it. You have no choice. You otherwise you're going to be dead. You're going to be, you know, yeshiva. Everyone's black and white. You need color. You have to have some color. You have to have something more than just you're in the army of God and you're going to follow blindly whatever God says. That's not sustainable either. So basically, it's a very thin line when you're trying to walk here. But without walking it, you basically you're gonna self-destruct. It's not gonna work. That's what the Torah is telling us. So you need both. You have to have both. It's vital to have both.